Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. My name is Chris Jackson.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. See, that was much better. I'm just ripping through the front of this, our opening. It's probably why I misspelled reliability so often and taught my spell checkers how to do it wrong for me on occasion too.
Yes, I must admit that I have the tendency to put a couple too many I's in reliability over the world, over the journey.
Well, and it's, you know, I-L-I, I think. So it looks, depending on the font, it makes it really tough. But we get misled by that, and we something we're familiar with, we just drive past it, and, you know, it just, they'll know what we mean. There's an R in the front and an L, a Y at the end of it, so it's close enough. But it brings up, it's not really related to, but I did get a series of questions earlier this week that was about taking a sample. And the questions were really about sample size. And they wanted to have, they had a tolerance or a specification that had a min and max value for something. And they had this molded part, and they were measuring the molded part pretty accurately, as far as I could tell from what they were showing me. But they only had so many samples. And so they had like 35 samples or 50 samples, something like that. And they, one of them, similar to our last discussion, the first thing they did is they assumed it was a normal distribution. And I'm like, that may not be true. Molded parts often have a truncated distribution, or they have a skewed distribution because it's of the way that process works. So I thought, and for given 30 samples, they said, well, we ran a goodness of fit test against a normal distribution and it had passed. And okay, you did due diligence there. That's good. So they estimated the mean and standard deviation. And then they said, this is the spread of our population. We're assuming this sample represents the population with some level of confidence. And then we want to see, well, what proportion will fall outside a spec? Right? And molded parts done well with the right material can be amazingly precise, right?
Yeah.
So they had 30 points that was at the edge of their ability to measure it. So there was like 8 unique measurements and a lot of repeats, and which presented its own problem in and of itself. But they were using a pretty accurate type of measurement system, but it was measuring to, I don't know, it wasn't quite angstroms, but it was pretty darn precise, I thought. Mm-hmm. And the conclusion, I would have stopped right there and says, you're making molded parts nearly identical to each other, and they're centered in your spec.
Yep.
Just walk away. Call it good. And they said, no, we need to estimate how many will be out of spec. And so they wanted to know what proportion would, from this normal distribution, would fall outside the spec. And it ended up being something like 45 or 50 standard deviations to the nearest edge of the spec. It was 45. So, it was okay. So far off on the tail that I thought, there's something bothering me that we take a sample that, you know, gives us the ability to say, here's the mean and standard deviation, and then we're going to project or extrapolate out to the far reaches of the universe of this distribution and try to make a meaningful conclusion on it.
So 40 to 45 standard deviations, and I'm guessing no data goes that far.
No, data wasn't even close to that far away.
Right. So, I mean, look at it this way. I mean, depending on who you speak to or which source you look at, the average height of human beings, or men, I should say, across the world, is about 5'10", 70 inches or so. Mm-hmm. And the standard deviation in that spread for the height of males across the world again, depending on who you speak to, is 4 inches. The exact numbers aren't important, but let's just say it's average height is 70 and the standard deviation is 4. Well, that means someone having a height of 0 inches is about 17 and a half standard deviations away from the mean.
Right.
No person ever can have a height of 0. That person has no matter whatsoever. That is physically impossible to have a height of 0, and that's only 17 and a half standard deviations away from the average in this case. So having something which is almost three times as far away from the mean is even more extreme. But the point here is that when we go and do statistical analyses of human heights across the world, and we do this fairly regularly for various reasons, health reasons, trying to work out organizational health characteristics and traits, it's often very important for governments to understand the average height of their people and, of course, characterize the spread. And the bell curve, the normal distribution, tends to do a fantastic job of modeling those data points. It's a really good model. We know that because the bell curve is essentially based on a scenario where if you add lots of random variables together, they will tend to give you this bell curve. And it's sort of analogous to us growing up, where our height as adults is governed by the sum of lots of different factors: food, genetics, activity, all sorts of different things.
Right.
So the bell curve is a really good model for human height, but even it breaks down when we're trying to push it to the extreme edges. And there's a whole statistical field where we're trying to study the extreme cases of random variables, because they behave very, very differently. Unexpectedly, I should say. Again, if we were to use the widely accepted model for human height, if we're going to go to a case scenario which is not nearly as extreme as the person asking the question today, the model breaks down. It tells us there is still a finite chance of us having someone who is precisely 0 inches high or 0 centimeters high. Mm-hmm. We know it's just not possible. So as soon as you deviate away from the data which allows you to conclude what the sort of basic model is, you really are shooting in the dark. It really is not you have no data that explains your extreme cases of the random variable you're studying.
Well, that confirms my unease, and it goes back to my, just basic undergrad stats course, where it was basically, thou shalt not extrapolate beyond your data. And then, in reliability, we do it all the time, that we take a look at some data and then we say, here's a Weibull distribution, probability of failure in 10 years is X and something like that. And we extrapolate and which adds a whole level of complexity onto the statistics that I think is underappreciated how risky that is. But the here it was just, it looks normal, and your analogy to the human height is perfect. And one is just physically that, this mold cannot make a part that has a negative dimension. It's just not possible. So we know it's not normal at this tail. It's truncated at this end, although it could, if there's no material gets shot into the mold, it'll have no dimensions whatsoever. It'll just be not there. And so I guess that's possible. But then it's not much of a part you can attach to anything else.
By the same token, though, your process, the thing you're studying, is fundamentally changed. I mean, you're studying, you model your machine behaving, let's call it, for lack of a better term, normally.
Right.
If it starts acting abnormally, then the model you use to describe it when it's working normally, again, disappears. It's not relevant anymore.
That's right. So it was... there was the desire to come up with a figure of, well, what's the probability of this failing? And the first round of discussion with it was that statistical procedure within the software package, to remain unnamed, truncated the answer to 0.0. And I said, it's really not possible to have no probability of something occurring. Now, in this case, it's physically impossible if it goes to zero height, for example. But that doesn't make sense. So they said, well, what we're doing is we're rounding it off. It says in the manual that when it says zero, it's no larger than 0.05 parts per million. It's a real small number. And yep. They said, well, it's small enough that probability is pretty small. And it's confirming that it's not any higher chance than that number. And that's mm-hmm. what caught my attention initially, was that they were putting together a fault tree analysis, and half of the blocks, the fundamental blocks, were 0.005 ppm. And I'm like, this seems odd that all of these different phenomena have the exactly same probability. And goes, oh, that was just a byproduct of the software we're using. It doesn't give us numbers below that. And I'm like, well,
that's a problem.
That's a problem. And if it still works out for you and you're rounding it off to a higher number than what it actually is, I'm like, all right, whatever, go with it. But then they dug into some more of this calculation, and I said, well, what is the actual number? And if the software can't do it, let's use a different piece of software. And it turned out to be, they were running this number out to some 40 standard deviations away. And it was like, if it truly was a true normal distribution that went to infinity in both directions, and there was no physical phenomena that we had to trip against or anything else, it was, if the process remained stable and nothing fundamentally changed in the world, it was like one chance in to the 65th power of ever having one of those shots of those parts in this molding process be anywhere near a spec limit. And I'm like, okay, this seems really unlikely. But then it got to the point where I'm thinking, well, even if it was truly a beautiful normal distribution, I only had 30 points in the middle of this distribution that gave me data that gave me roughly a spread around the three standard, plus or minus three standard deviation. And it fit a normal curve beautifully in the set where the data was. But the further I step away from that, where the data was, the more uneasy I became. And I went, is there something, because if I had one, like the 57th decimal point on one of those measurements had changed by one digit, those tails would be completely different at 40 standard deviation.
Right.
And I thought that the applying a confidence bound on that is just ridiculous. It was kind of what I was thinking. But I didn't know what the theory was or how far can you extrapolate your data in a meaningful way. And that was kind of my gut feel. And then we ended up talking about more of the physical limits of this stuff. It's just not possible to be in this far away.
I don't know if it's a million miles removed from a scenario where I was involved in looking at a risk assessment for a nuclear power plant in general. So they had a number of risk scenarios and risk curves, which essentially helped us understand the frequency of certain bad things happening. And so we saw a lot of these bell-shaped curves based on some, no doubt, robust risk analysis process. But the horizontal axis for all these different scenario curves was in the logarithmic scale in terms of years. And one curve in particular caught my eye because it was a relatively flat curve. I think it was centered around about, I want to say, somewhere between 10 to the power of 8 and 10 to the power of 9 years. Mm-hmm. And it was, the tails extended to the right well beyond 10 to the power of 10. And the question I immediately asked is that, not the question, I suppose, but the universe, as we know it, is 14 billion years old. So we have some scenarios that have been spat out by a risk assessment team for a nuclear power plant scenario, and they think that a certain scenario is going to occur roughly once every universe lifetime. You go, how can you possibly create a curve with that level of fidelity when it's centered around about the age of the universe. And if you look at the right tail of it, it goes to the lifetimes of several universes, depending on your philosophy when it comes to science and reincarnation and big bangs and stuff like that. You'd be waiting a long time for that particular scenario to likely occur. We sometimes like putting statistical rigor in areas where we simply can't. We just simply cannot fathom the frequency of things where if we go through the process, we get this curve, which suggests we're going to have to wait a universe lifetime for a particular risk scenario to occur in a nuclear power plant. And we need to also point out that since the nuclear industry started, at least domestically, generating electricity 50 years or so, 60 years perhaps, mm-hmm. we've had three big problems. We've had Chernobyl, we've had Three Mile Island, and we've had
Fukushima,
and we've had countless near misses that not many people know about. Mm-hmm. When we try to put statistical rigor on these really so-called rare events, it can be really troubling. I mean, there's no way known that you can take that curve suggesting this particular risk scenario is going to occur once every 14 billion years or so. You just can't take that seriously. And it might be the result of rigorous statistical analysis or whatever thought processes, you know, analysts went through. But it just highlights the point of how challenging it is to model those extreme cases. We as human beings are not well equipped to characterize outliers or characterize the extreme instances of certain random processes.
Well, I think the key part there is that randomness bit of it. And even in when you get into atomic level science in the physics of stuff like that, it's unbelievably small numbers and just amazing dimensions. Yet mm-hmm. physicists can tease that apart and saying when these two things collide, this little bit here is going to spin off to the right. You know, and it's going to last for 3 femtoseconds or whatever, and then it's going to explode into these 3 parts. And, you know, it just boggles my mind how we know those things and how we can calculate these things out. And I know because I struggled with the math in college a handful of times. And yet, then I'd walk out of that physics class and I go into an engineering class and they're saying, well, if you design, put all the components in that have the recommended values at this point right here, you should get 10 volts, give or take 2 volts. But that's okay. Because of the differences in the components and the variability of the materials and the thickness of the copper and all these other gazillion nuances that if we looked closely enough, we could map it out at a molecular or atomic level. But we don't need to. Mm-hmm. In general, it all kind of mushes together and averages it out, and I got about 10 volts. I think I had 9.82 volts. But one of the parts of our lesson, though, in the physics class is just because you can measure it to 15 decimal points doesn't mean that means anything. Mm-hmm. You got to understand the process of your measurement and the limitations of your data collection and the fundamental phenomena that are occurring. And I think that gets lost all too often is that, oh, well, I put it in a hypothesis test and it says there's a p-value of 0.02 and it's this and that, and we can make all these conclusions of it. And then you step back and give it a sniff test and go, well, that doesn't make much sense. It's fun to put stuff in a machine and get numbers and to as many decimal points as you dare do. But I think we've lost track in some cases of, well, what does the data really support? How much information was in those 30 data points that we used? It doesn't really go out that far.
Yeah, and that's one of the challenges of reliability engineering. We're actually not interested in when most of our things are going to fail. We're interested in when the first 10, 5, 1.1 percent of those things failing, which is a classic case of the extreme values about our random variable we're studying. The good thing, though, about reliability is that when we're looking at the first number of things failing, we are still, when we run a test, we typically run a test where it starts at zero. So we're still observing that space, that time from zero to our first failure. So even though we're really interested in that really early period, and it might appear like we are moving towards the edges of the statistical model we're going to end up with, we're still observing that really early initial piece during most tests. It's mm-hmm. where if we look, we talk about, you know, I think we talked about Six Sigma not too long ago, and that's a classic case of this weird interpretation of extreme cases where they want to have a very specific number, 6 standard deviations away from the mean, assuming a bell curve,
right?
And where defects per million opportunities, and they say, well, we are assuming we're going to be within 6 standard deviations of the limit, so therefore there is a 3.5 to whatever power chance, whatever, there's a small number, but it's a number. I forget what it is. You might have to refresh my memory, but it appears, I think it might be 3.5 defects per million opportunities.
Yep.
We know that because that's...
And that's also with the assumption that you're going to have a 1.5 standard deviation drift.
Correct. But even that's 4.5 standard deviations away from the mean.
Yep.
But in practice, and even though that most of, we're typically talking about manufacturing characteristics here, like mm-hmm. activation force or some characteristic you're studying or some that needs to be within a tolerance when you're manufacturing something, even 4.5 standard deviations away from the mean, the model really breaks down. There's no way known you can assume that you're going to have 3.5 defects per million opportunities, 4.5 standard deviations away from the mean, even if all the other bits of data seem to produce that prototypical bell curve. It's largely a pointless metric.
To me, I think the conclusion of this is that it becomes an order of magnitude-ish measure. There's no way it's the 5 decimal points at 10 to the minus 9. No, we don't know it that well. It's small. It's a small number. There's a remote possibility that we're going to have problems with the specification. Let's move on to something that's more important. but not get wrapped up in this cloak that we believe we have these superpowers to look that far out on a curve. I don't think we really do. We haven't made that telescope yet for statistics.
No, and those probabilities we're talking about still are much smaller than the chances of you winning the jackpot for a lottery, and still lots of people happily convincing themselves that they have a reasonable chance of walking away with the.
Well, let's not get human behavior in this mix. That's just really muddies it up.
I think human behavior is part of this, though. I mean,
oh, yeah.
How we wish away the realities of the physical world.
Yeah, no, that well may be a subject to another discussion. I'm thinking, if you're listening to this, is, you know, have you seen this delusional behavior? It might be the right topic for another discussion, you know, or if you know of a good way, a methodology to say, you know, this isn't really useful, but how do you move forward? We're still going to be caught in that dilemma. We only have so much data, and we got to come up with some ability to inform a decision. Mm-hmm. How do you couch that? How do you make sure the decision makers know it's not 3.582876 24 to the minus ninth? It's just, we don't know that. We know it's a small number, but we don't know if it's 10 to minus eighth or 10 to minus 12. We just really don't know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, let us know. What's your thoughts on this, and how do you deal with these extravagant extrapolations off of an assumed distribution, for example? How do you approach that or avoid it more would be a good idea too. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a contact form there. And you can also find Chris and I and the other hosts of the show on LinkedIn or in our about pages at Ascendo. And as you know, we thoroughly enjoy hearing from you, and your comments and feedback and questions are often fodder for future discussions. So it's a great way for you to join the conversation. So with that, Chris, let's go make measurements and extrapolate wildly for this afternoon. It's a Friday, actually, when we're recording this, so we can extrapolate all weekend if you want to.
I mean, we could do some more fun things, but okay, if we don't want to extrapolate, I'm sure we can. Sure, we can do that.
What do you mean that's not fun? Is that, you're implying that doing statistics to 37 decimal places isn't just inherently rewarding activity?
What altitude do you live at in California?
Yeah,
okay, out of curiosity,
yeah,
friends.
Yeah, I live near Santa Cruz. The wind must be blowing from there.
Sounds about right.
All right. Well, cool. Well, enjoy your weekend, Chris, and we'll talk to you again soon. And we look forward to hearing from you as a listener, and surely appreciate you listening to the show. So we'll sign off with that. All right, Chris?
Absolutely. See you all next time.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.